Yeah.
Go fight to the death.
Let's fire that shutter. Okay. Bill, how you feeling?
I'm feeling excellent, Jeffrey. How are you?
I'm good, because it is episode 48 of
48?
On Taking Pictures. 48? We're almost at 50.
50. What happens when we hit 50?
I don't know. I don't know.
We start thinking about retirement.
That's right. That's right. Hey, this is episode 48 of On Taking Pictures. We're here each and every week talking about the art and science and sometimes even the nebulous stuff of making pictures. My name is Jeffrey Sidoris from FadedAndBlurred.com. With me on the East Coast, on the, some would say the right coast.
Yes.
Bill Wadman.
Where time is actual time. That's right. Not Eastern time minus three. yes. Here I am in Brooklyn, feeling well.
Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Can we get a big up to Brooklyn?
We could get a giant up to Brooklyn, I'm sure. Not from me, though. I'm sure.
A lot of good photographers live in Brooklyn, don't they?
Yeah, Joey L. lives in Brooklyn.
I like Joey L.
Yeah. So what are we talking about today?
We got a lot to talk about. We got a big show today. We're going to talk a little bit about copyright.
Ooh.
Or copy wrong.
Yeah, that's about it.
you had a thing, Big Time Magazine used your image
a big time media conglomerate, I guess you could say. So I get a tweet the other day from Gina Trapani, who is a friend of mine who I've taken pictures of. And, if you guys don't know who she is, she started Life Hacker years ago and she's on This Week in Google on Twit, and she's on All About Android on Twit, and she actually does in beta on 5x5 here.
On 5x5? We're on 5x5.
I know. And so she's a blogger, tech nerd, goddess, lady.
She's big time, right?
Yeah.
She's in the upper echelon of
internet
and tech culture.
ThinkUp app, which is like this PHP backend app thing on your server that goes and collects all of your social media stuff in one place. It's pretty cool.
She sounds like she's wicked smart.
She's wicked smart. She's super sweet and she's adorable as all get up.
And apparently one of the hottest women in tech, right?
Yeah. So there's, I don't know, 40 hottest women in tech or whatever it is. And she said, hey, it looks like Complex Magazine took your picture of me and used it. And I was like, whoa, okay.
Whoa.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, they must have found it on the web somewhere, and they just stuck it on their site. They didn't ask. They didn't credit me. They didn't pay me.
So uncredited, not even photo buy.
No, nothing.
Yeah.
And it's sort of – this stuff really bothers me because there's sort of a, you know – We didn't know. And then, okay, yeah, we'll pay you now, assuming
right.
so.
There's
right?
this
and
sort of faux
yeah,
naivete
like they
about
they,
it.
They try to get away with it. And it's like, you know very well that you're taking somebody's photo. And if you don't know that it's Creative Commons or something, then it's not.
Right.
And you shouldn't just stick it up on your you know, publication online and wherever else without asking.
And apparently some other photographers have...
Well,
said
apparently,
the same thing, right?
A lot of the people on the list are pretty mad. There's a Gawker article that Conrad just sent over to me saying that like Zenny Chardin and Jolie O'Dell and all these people are saying, hey, you know, it's not about me being hot. I'm a smart woman or whatever it is. And then Jolie O'Dell says, hey, that photo of me was taken by Mostly Lisa. Take it down and get me off the list while you're at it. You know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And so Gina said, hey, it looks like they used your picture. And she's like, you know, do you want me to go to bat for you? And like, we'll write an email together. And I was like, well, let me see what I can do just on my own. And these kind of situations are touchy because you don't want to be a complete jerk, you know, because it could be that the person who did it is just some intern somewhere and is stupid and doesn't know, or you know what I mean? That kind of thing. So, you know,
It doesn't have to be some sort of nefarious conspiracy.
Right.
It could just be an oversight, but still it should be brought to their attention. Right. Right?
So I found out the guy who wrote the article, and I wrote him on Twitter. I was like, hey, or I wrote him an email and said, hey, you're using my picture on this article. And he said, oh, and I said, do you have an editor or somebody I can contact about that? And he said, oh, I had nothing to do with it, but here's my editor, you know? And I was like, okay, well, I didn't say that you had
something. Wait, so the guy that wrote the article had nothing to do with it?
Well, he probably wrote the text. He probably chose the people and whatever it is. And he probably got paid, you know, $50 and a lollipop to do it, you know?
Right. A lollipop?
Well, you know. So.
What, are we in the 1920s in Kansas? Is that what they think?
It's true.
Here, boy, here's your sweets. Now get out of here.
Yeah. Say, you got yourself a lollipop there? And so I send an email to this guy yesterday. I said, hey, look, not for nothing, but you are using my photograph of Gina Trapani without permission, without credit, and without payment. And, you know, it's my copyrighted image. What the heck are you doing?
Yeah, how'd that go?
And I said, look, you know, I'd rather not get my lawyers involved in this, so I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt. Here's an invoice for what it would cost you to buy that photo from me. You know, I hope we can solve this, you know, like civilized people.
Sure.
And I've heard nothing from them, and I'm going to give them one more day, and then I'm going to get mad.
You invoiced for basically the usage fee.
Yeah. I was just like, this is, if you had contacted me, this is what I would have charged you. So that's what you're going to pay me since you did it without me. Okay. Now, some people would go, oh, well, we'll just take it down then. It's like, well, no, you've used it for the last week. you know, you can't just, oh, well, I'm sorry, I'll just take it down. No, you know, because that's what you're going to do every time then.
Right.
So, but obviously it wasn't just me, because apparently, like Jolie O'Dell said, you know, Lisa Bettany apparently had pictures on there too
Do you know if Lisa Bettany or any of the other photographers said anything list that are going to bat for them?
Yeah. And I'm sure Gina would go to bat for me if I asked her to. I sort of said, you know, let me see what I can do without you, because I don't want to have it be a thing for her too. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to get her in the middle of it. It's not her fault. But she egged me on pretty good. You know, she was just like, no, go to hell with those people, you know, something along those lines.
Okay. So here's my question for you. And let me, are we good on this?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. This is where I have questions about copyright and fair use and unfair use and fees and damages and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
There was another story on the LA Times that guy that runs a travel agency in Long Beach had used an image on their website and was contacted by Getty with the following note. It has come to our attention that you're using an image represented by Getty Images for online promotional purposes, and they demanded $1,000 in damages, or $900 if this guy agreed to pay up within 2 weeks.
Okay.
Okay. The long and short of it is the guy says he's not going to pay the $1,000 because Getty charges as little as $49 to license the image.
So you think that he should only have to pay $49?
Well, here's the rub. You just sent an invoice for the license fee, basically.
Right.
The usage fee. You didn't send an invoice for any sort of manufactured damages, because there really aren't any damages.
Well, I could argue that there are, but you know, let's stay off that for the moment. Yeah,
let's just give me the benefit of the doubt on for this.
Okay, yeah.
So Getty is claiming that this travel agency in Long Beach basically cost them $1,000 in damages.
Okay.
And this is what I don't understand, that somehow the use of this image is now worth 20 times the license fee. Let's take the dollar amount out of it and look at the math.
Okay.
They're demanding 20 times the licensing fee.
I think that there's a number of things in here. First of all, there's punishment for using it illegally.
Okay.
You used it illegally, you don't get to pay $50. You now have to pay us a lot more than that because we had to have systems that now look for all these things and send you letters, and there's somebody who's got to fill out an invoice and send it to you, and you know, blah 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 blah.
Okay.
And as a deterrent for other people not to do it in the future. Right.
Which has absolutely zero chance of deterring anyone from doing it in the future.
Okay, but the flip side of that is if you just said you have to pay us our $49, then who would ever pay for anything on Getty because they could just wait till Getty finds them and then pay the $49. And maybe Getty wouldn't find them.
Right.
You know,
no, I get it. It just seems a little
excessive.
Yeah, there doesn't seem to be a middle ground.
What if it was $500?
It's better than $1,000. I just think that
what do you think is a fair number?
I'm not sure. And I don't think it's for me to decide what the number should be. It just seems
it
seems like nobody has really gotten a handle on copyright and fair use. And there's no clear cut lines of if then, right. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I think that there's a number of things going on here. I mean, look, this magazine is fully aware of how copyrights work.
Absolutely.
You know, the guy who, more so
than the owner of a travel agency trying to put up a website, giving the guy the benefit of the doubt.
At the same time, that guy, you know, where'd that image come from? He just went and grabbed it off. You know, people know that things are owned by people, you know?
Sure.
So I think that there's a certain amount of sort of a Wild West thing on the internet right now, which sort of throws the rights of people out the window.
It almost seems like some of these, well, a couple things going on. It seems like some of these larger agencies are using their weight, their ability to intimidate and look very official to unfairly come up with a fee. It seems like that nobody's really gotten a handle on what these penalties should be, what the fees should be. They're kind of taking what they can get. Is that fair to say?
Maybe. I mean, look, when early on in our whole on this show, we talked about the Jay Mazel thing with the Kind of Blue picture. Didn't we talk about that on the show?
I think so. Yeah.
Because what's the guy's name who did Kind of Bloop?
The 8-bit thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't remember his name, but
the famous cover of Miles Davis record, if you haven't listened to episode 1 through 48, is a photograph by Jay Mazel of Miles Davis playing trumpet, and some tech guy who I can't remember took some of his money and made a thing called Kind of Bloop, which is an 8-bit version of the album, you know, recorded in basically recreated with beeps and bloops like it's on Nintendo.
Right.
And they took Jay's cover and they basically recreated it as a 64 by 64 pixel icon, you know, for the cover, basically.
Right.
And the guy didn't just take it and shrink it down in Photoshop to 64 by 64. Apparently some guy just basically redrew it and it looks like the cover, but it's obviously drawn again by hand.
Right. It's not aliased or anything, or anti-aliased rather. It's hand done pixel by pixel by pixel.
And Jay's lawyer sued the guy and won.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it's not Jay's picture. It's not like Jay's file or Jay, you know what I mean? Like it's a version. It's a recreated hand drawn version of Jay's picture, and they still won.
Right. It's a derivative. Now, with regard to that, did they sue for so much because of who the guy was? I mean, they knew the guy had internet money. He had.
I think that Jay is one of those people who wants to make a point. He's very protective.
Okay. So it was an example case.
Yeah, but he's often like that. He sued just to keep the Kind of Blue thing. From what I understand is each time Sony put out a new version of Kind of Blue, like on mini disc and, you know, SACD and all these other formats, he sued because that wasn't in their original contract and he won each time. So wow. Now people there are people in the tech world who and I how did we put it? When we talked about this originally, I said, you know, at what point does that deconstruct and now it's no longer Jay's thing? If it was 4 pixels, you know, one darker blue in the lower left-hand corner or something like that, is that still Jay's? Like, at what point is it no longer recognizable as what it is, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, at what point does this whole thing become, you know what, this is, I think they were selling it, but at the same time, you know, it wasn't about making money. This was just like a fun project for them. What really should have happened, they should have asked Jay, and then Jay should have said, yeah, sure, you know, give me 5% of whatever you make, or whatever
right.
it is, right?
Right.
Or that's what should have happened.
Give me $1,000 and you can
right.
do it.
Exactly. But his lawyer, Jay's lawyers, even said, had he even asked before, they would have said no anyway.
Right. Well, so and it ended up costing him, didn't it cost like $30,000, $32,000,
right.
something like that?
Right. So, and that was, you know, one picture for some internet thing that wasn't going to go anywhere. So, you know what? Like, if some guy's been using some picture on his travel site, people have to realize that this stuff costs money and that professionals are doing it. There's a lot of people in the tech world who are very upset at Jay, but it's funny because when I tend to agree with them just from the, okay, don't be a jerk. You know, like you have a lot of money and you're now 82 years old. Like, mm-hmm. you know, spread the wealth a little, you know, like if some tech nerd kid wants to make a version of Kind of Blue, let him use the stupid picture for the cover of it as a joke. Cause that's essentially what it is. You know,
there was an interesting kind of aside to the Kind of Bloop thing where the guy that created it, he kept going down and down and down and down until it was just 4 pixels of color.
Right.
But the whole album cover was 4 pixels. And it was like, where do we draw the line? He did these iterations of 4 pixels, 8 pixels, 12 pixels.
Yes.
And to your point, where is enough? Where do we draw the line? Does the guy that came up with the album cover or the album title, Kind of Blue, does he sue because Kind of Bloop is a play off of Kind of Blue and you couldn't have had one without the other? And where does it end? And that's what I'm saying about, I think copyright and copyright law still has quite a ways to go because there are no hard and fast lines.
Well, I'm going to put that post back in the show notes, by the way, show notes, 5x5.tv/OTP/48. You can get the show notes. But no, you're entirely right. And I think in that case, it was just a lot of egos on both sides and a big giant mess. But it's what's interesting is that even though I tend to agree with that kid, Andy Bayo, I tend to agree with him that, you know what, come on, we're using this, we're doing something silly and fun. Get on board, Jay. But when I talk to some older photographer friends of mine, they bring up the fact that, you know what, Jay Mazel, through all these things that he does, has been fighting for photographers' rights to their work for decades. And that in many ways, the reason why you can still make a living is because he does stuff like that to protect people like us.
Yeah. And for a lot of for photographers of Jay's, I don't want to say stature,
caliber.
But yeah, caliber or who have been shooting long enough to remember times back before there were, stock images and that kind of monetization of photography. You're taking to them, it's very close to home. You're taking money directly out of their pocket.
Right.
Because there is this sort of new frontier of photography of being able to license images, and you can license them for certain use or in perpetuity or one-offs. There are so many gray areas that it really is kind of hard to keep up, especially if you're entering into this type of photography new.
True.
You know, if you're trying to get into the micro stock photography market, or you know, licensing images for use over here but not over there. This is a broad subject that still has yet to have any sort of definite boundaries.
No, absolutely. And what Complex should do is write me an email back and say, "Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Wadman. We will process your invoice immediately because it's a perfectly reasonable amount of money to charge."
Sure.
That's what they should do.
It doesn't seem like you were asking for $20,000
or
something.
No. I was asking for a few $100 because that's what I would have charged them to use the photo. So it's kind of like a we'll see. You know, we'll see what they come back as. But at the same time, I mean, on the flip side, I had a client contact me recently, and they wanted to hire me to do some real estate, some architectural shots. Now, I don't normally do this kind of thing, but you know what? I can do that, you know? Mm-hmm. And it was for a big developer, and they had this big building they wanted me to shoot. And they wanted to use it for a trade journal. That's what I was shooting it for. And I said, okay, well, you know, I'll shoot it for this much to retouch the images and this much for your usage of those pictures in this trade journal. And they said, well, we can't do the usage. We don't do that kind of thing. You know, we want rights to the images. And I said, well, then if you want a complete buyout of the images I'm going to shoot, that's going to cost a lot more.
Okay. Just for those who may be listening and not understand that, when you're talking about a complete buyout,
okay,
you are relinquishing copyright.
Right.
Well, they use it for whatever they want.
Well, generally what you can do is you can say, you know, I retain copyright, but you have usage for whatever you want in any media for X amount of years. You know what I mean? You could make it so, but I can still use it for my own promotional purposes, you know, my own self-promotion purposes.
Sure,
and that kind
sure.
of stuff. So you're not really giving up copyright, but you're allowing them to use the copyright for
It's a fairly
a
broad
time.
License.
Yes, very broad.
Yeah.
Now, but
okay.
one of the things that a lot of people in photography don't quite understand is that at the top level, when you're talking about doing work for advertising and that kind of stuff, even if, let's say McDonald's, right? Let's just take this as a use case. And I've never worked for McDonald's, but just as a company that everyone knows, or Coke, since we were using Coke today. Let's use
okay.
Coke. If Coke hires me
it's
to
the
take
real thing.
Yeah. Okay. If Coke hires me to take pictures of you, Jeffrey, holding a Coke can for some ad out on your balcony, even if, let's say they pay me, let's just say $1,000 just to keep it, whatever. They pay me $1,000 to take those pictures of you out on your balcony. Even though they paid me for those pictures are still mine.
Mm-hmm.
They paid me to take them, but they have yet to pay to use those pictures. So even if it's for an ad, they will pay me to take those pictures. Then I will give them a certain license for them to use those pictures for a year in a certain amount of advertisements or what have you. I mean, you could lay out the specifics.
Sure.
After
but,
those.
But you specify this as a line item, right?
Yeah.
Your usage, when you're quoting a client, it's a line item on the invoice.
Yeah, there's contractual stuff. It's like, what are you using it for? How long do you need it for? How many copies of this book are you printing? You know, I mean, there's ways to figure this stuff out. I'm terrible at actually doing the figures, but that's the way it works. So after 2 years, if Coke wants to use that, let's say I sold them usage for 2 years, 3 years from now, they come back to me and they're like, oh, we'd like to use that image. They have to pay me more money.
Okay.
So even though they paid me to take those pictures, they don't get to use those pictures for everything they want unless they are buying the usage. Okay.
Sure.
So these people basically wanted to get usage of all of these images that I was taking for the price of me taking them. And the price of me taking them was not a huge amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a big, big corporation. And I was like, no, you know, yeah, you could have unlimited rights to use them for whatever you want, but you're not going to get that for a few hundred bucks.
Right.
You know, that's going to cost you because I am, for all I know, yeah, you're using it for this trade journal. But what if tomorrow you end up making a big giant billboard that's outside the Lincoln Tunnel and on front page of the New York Times?
And they've got the license to do that because you've given them unlimited use.
Exactly. It's just like, no, I'm never, you never do that. Never. So, I mean, even the whole like blanket license thing, I mean, people tend to say, don't do that unless you absolutely have to. Like that's last ditch effort kind of thing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Cause it's a bad move for me. Right. I mean, it could be a good move for me if they're going to pay me $20,000 for an image, you know. Great.
Right.
Have fun. I'll pay off my credit cards. You know, like, you know, that's great. But that's generally not how it works, right? You want to not do that whenever possible.
This seems to be an area, another area of photography that is in and of itself its own learning curve. Or you offload it to, you know, an attorney or an agent or whatever, if you're able to.
Well,
but
yeah.
It seems that this, you know, like we were talking before the show, it seems that it's the low end or the entry level, let's say, and the higher end that are really getting squeezed in photography more so than the middle.
Yeah. The $100 for Gina's picture in some online thing versus or the $10,000 picture for whatever things. Yeah. Those are the hard places, because especially at the top, I mean, there's, when you go to an advertising agency, they realize that it's going to cost them because they've been doing this for years, and that's the way it works.
Sure.
But there are people in the middle who don't understand. And in this particular case, I was going through a sort of a middleman PR company.
Right.
And it's like, well, you know, we don't do that kind of thing. We don't, you know, do usage that way. And I was like, well, I'm not going to give up my rights because it makes you uncomfortable, or that's not the way you do things. Sorry. You know? And they were like, well, how much would it cost? And I was like, a lot of money. And I quoted them a lot of money because that's what it would cost. Mm-hmm. And they walked away. And it's like, okay, well, you know what? Sorry. Win some, lose some.
Now, I wonder, did this sort of, let's say, intermediary person, because that maybe they weren't the decision maker, do they walk away, they go back to their people and maybe come back? Or is that the end of it?
They could.
In your experience, well, how has it worked?
Sometimes they come back and sometimes they don't. Sometimes maybe they won't come back because they're embarrassed, you know?
Okay.
You know, like, oh, I can't go back to him because we already said no. You know, even if in the end, the thing is that I don't think that they would find a really reputable photographer who would go take these pictures, who would just give them the rights for the amount of money they were talking about. You know, they shouldn't be able to find one of those people.
So
if they are, that person's getting screwed.
Yeah. So they either go to somebody else that's, let's say, of your caliber and pay them because they don't want to come back to you.
Right.
Or they go to someone who is less expensive and maybe doesn't do the kind of work that you do, so they can get it done for less money.
Yeah. Or yeah. But even then, I mean, if they're doing work that's good, they should be getting paid what it's worth to this giant multinational corporation.
Right.
Right. So if they're doing it for $500 and a lollipop, then that's a problem for the entire industry, because you just have lowballed everybody.
Right.
You
know? No, that's kind of what I was saying about the bell curve.
Right. And that company is going to think that they can do that forever. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, you know what? If I'm doing a week's worth of work and I'm making $500, that's 25 right. grand a year. I can't do that. You know, maybe some kid who just got out of college can do it, but then he shouldn't be doing that. You know, that's shooting himself in the foot in the long run.
Yeah. This is a broad topic, and I am still very confused by it, because it seems to be not only confusing on the whole, but it seems to have such there seem to be so many levels of sort of scattering and splintering within different genres or disciplines of photography.
Yeah,
we talked a couple weeks ago about photojournalism and how, you know, the Times or USA Today or even AP are paying a couple hundred dollars as a day rate.
Right.
You know, and it's like, how do you live on that, especially in a major city like New York, Chicago, LA, San Francisco? You're not going to get work every single day.
Right.
But even if you did, that's $200 for your day rate. That's gross.
Right. So you're making $50,000 minus taxes, minus whatever it is. Yeah, you're coming home with $32,000 a year, and you've got to pay rent, which is $1,800, $2,000 a month. There's 24 grand, boom, gone.
Yeah.
You're living on 8 grand a year for food and healthcare and transportation, and, you know, it gets ugly real fast.
It's very strange.
And that's the thing with the arts in general. I mean, there's always this sort of I mean, we've talked about that before, where it's like, you know what? Oh, you're doing what you like? Well, then you're going to have to suffer.
Yeah, is this idea that the universe somehow gets to penalize you for attempting to do what you love.
Right. Right. I mean, and even now, like, I'll talk to my mother and I'll be like, hey, I got some gig and it's X amount of money. And she'll be like, oh, that's great, whatever, you know, because, you know, just mothers being mothers.
Right.
But and
when
then
are you
going
to get a real job?
Well, I mean, there's a little bit of that. And it's kind of like, Mom, do you understand? Like, even if I did this, if I got two of these a week, that's still less than you make it your job. So right. I need a lot of these things. So, you know, if you're some company paying me $1,000 to do something for a few days, like, that's not actually that much money, because I need to have one of those every day, every week in order to make a living.
Right.
You know, so it may seem like it's a lot of money because, you know, it's like, oh, that's almost as much as a laptop. Well, you know what? For 3 days of work, it's like, well, you know what? You're getting paid that much, you know, The guy I shot a couple weeks ago.
And I'm not going to work for the next month and a half.
Right. And the guy a couple weeks ago that I shot, the lawyer guy, I mean, dude made $6.5 million last year.
Right.
You know, like, okay, your hourly rate is like what I'm asking for a week's worth of work or whatever it is. Right. You know, it's not, you know, and how much time did I spend emailing and finishing images and talking through your production people because they didn't know that it was the right size image or they're, you know. Like all that stuff has to get funneled in too. And, oh, marketing. Oh, I got to send out emails and I got to pay for agency access and I've got to, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it's like all of that has to fit in too. It's a business. You're talking like a larger thing. There's a guy I know who's a photographer out in the Midwest and he was bidding on some commercial jobs and he got them and was doing whatever it is. And then he eventually ended up using PhotoQuote, which is one of these pieces of software that lets you sort of build these itemizations, these estimates.
Okay. So you can do line items to send out to a client. Okay.
You basically say, oh, it's a magazine of this kind of thing, and they're going to do that many. Okay, I need to charge that much or whatever it is. Like it has equations in it. It has things to work from. And basically when he did this, he found that it was telling him to charge about twice what he was charging.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And he came on he's a friend of mine on Facebook, and he came on and apologized. He was like, I'm sorry to all the other photographers that I know. Apparently I've been undercharging and I'm not going to do that again. You know?
Wow.
So it's an interesting, it's the whole thing is a crazy, crazy business and, it's tough. I mean, you know, there are you know, going rates for this kind of stuff far more than there are for, you know, oh, I'm a headshot photographer. Well, that could be $200 or that could be $1,200, you know?
Right. Right.
Or the, you know, a wedding. Oh, I'm going to charge you $1,000. I'm going to charge you $5,000. There's a much larger range for that kind of stuff. If you're selling a picture to Goobers to sell some candy and it's going to be run in this magazine at this size, that there's numbers there that aren't
Goobers,
a range of 10.
A lollipop. Where are you?
I don't know. I got sugar on the brain, apparently. Anyway, I think it's an interesting conversation. I just think that it's a larger thing.
No, I do too. And it does get very granular very quickly. And there aren't a lot of resources that you can go to for guidance. I mean, there are resources, but I know like AIGA, the Institute of Graphic Designers, they put out every year their roundup of what different types of graphic design professionals make, whether you're a creative director, art director, you know, that kind of thing. And it's a really handy way to
ballpark
kind of gauge where you're at.
Am I under market or at market? And
yeah, exactly. And they will break it down by, you know, large metropolitan area, small metropolitan area, urban area, you know, rural area.
Yeah.
So it really does give you a nice kind of guide to what you're charging or what you're making. But photography, it seems to be so splintered or even maybe splintered is kind of a pejorative term, maybe nuanced, that it's harder to make that up to your point. You know, you've got headshot photographers doing it for $50 or you've got, you know, Peter Hurley doing it for, you know, $1,500 or $2,000 or whatever he charges. And every place in between. So it's much harder to gauge what you should be charging, what you're able to charge, what you can get away with, what you can, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's scary because I mean, the whole thing shifts and things change over time. And you know, there's things like Magnum out there who are like, oh, we're going to take a bunch of photographs and we're going to sell them. And I think that even Magnum photographers aren't making as much as they were before. Cause you know, the too many people with too many cameras everywhere taking pictures of news events, you know?
Yes.
You said the other day, we should talk about that. Take my picture thing.
Yes. I was just going to lead into that. Yeah. I found a video yesterday, day before, called Take My Picture, and we'll put a link to it in the show notes. And basically this is, it's a video commentary on the changing landscape of fashion photography from the point of view of the rise of fashion blogging and culture blogging and, you know, this idea that anyone can be a celebrity if they're wearing, you know, the right clothing. And then there are, you know, 50 photographers just sort of camped out at these various locations waiting for someone to come by. And it strikes me as odd. Number one, one of the people that they interview in the film is saying, where's the market for all these photographs? What's happening with all of these photographs?
Yeah.
I don't know. There is no, he didn't have an answer. He's like, unless there's something going on that I don't know about.
They're all going up on blogs, and these blogs make enough money from advertising that it supports it? Or is it a bunch of, is it 500 photographers who are trying to get into the fashion world? So they take pictures of models on the street during fashion week and claim that's a portfolio?
I don't know. One of the guys they're talking to is a guy named Tim Blanks, who's a fashion journalist and has been for years and years. And he's like, I just don't know. You know, we look at the shows back in the 80s, and there were a few crews backstage or a few photographers that would show up to cover them, you know, and then the supermodel thing happened and that changed. But he said now it's almost the culture surrounding these events overshadows the events themselves. They're talking about, you know, these sort of online celebrities hanging out outside the shows who are getting photographed by dozens of photographers, themselves becoming this weird sort of celebrity in a sense.
Yeah.
And it's just like, what's happening with all of these images? You've got, you know, 50, 60, 100 people firing off images. They're not framing images. They're not composing images.
No,
they're
just it's a camera up in the air going blank, 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 blank.
Yeah, it's this sort of run and gun type of thing. And I just, number one, you know, what's the market for it? But number two, how satisfying can that be as the person behind the lens?
Well, they're not taking pictures so much as just trying to. It's like they're throwing a net in the water and hoping they catch a nice fish.
Yes. Yeah. We did a hangout for those of you who weren't able to make it. We did a Google Plus hangout on Friday, which was a lot of fun. We're going to do another one on this Friday, but we haven't decided on the time. But one of the people who joined us was Ibarian X Perello from the Candid Frame. And he brought up this idea and Bill, you and I talked about this afterwards. This idea of, and I might get it wrong, but it's photography as part of a larger, happier life. That photography is somehow contributing or informing your life.
Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
This originally came out because of that question that guy asked. He was asking me about, I talk about how I think of my images as important to me, and I want to make them so that they're noticed by people after the fact, after I'm dead or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And he brought that up, and I kind of talked about that a little bit. And then Abernex said something along the lines of, you know, you can't control what people are going to think about your stuff, especially after you're gone. You should just live your life and make your pictures and, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
And I agree with that. And I wanted to take this opportunity to clarify what I mean. When I say that I want my pictures to be important after I'm gone, I don't really expect them to be,
mm-hmm.
but that's my goal, right? That's sort of the ring at the center of the bullseye that I'm aiming for every time. You know, like I hope my stuff is that good, but that has to do with my own issues with regret,
sure,
and depression, you know.
But even that couldn't that even be a part of a larger picture of not necessarily the photos are the thing. It's just somehow acknowledging that you were here.
Yes, absolutely. And
somehow acknowledging that you spent time here and are remembered for that somehow. It's not necessarily about the pictures then.
Right, exactly. It's about that there's something to show for me having been here.
Yes. Okay.
Right? And I think that that's the other thing is that there are some people who don't, I mean, there are some people who are photographers who take pictures, who it is a part of their life.
much like, oh, I play golf every weekend. You know, they enjoy it. They whatever it is. But like, if no one remembers that they played golf 200 years from now, it's not going to be a big deal. They're just living their life in the moment and they're taking pictures and they enjoy it and they are taking great pictures and that's fantastic. You know, I'm all for that.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I'm not happy unless I feel like I'm making something that is at the level that I am proud of it later.
Sure. Sure.
You know, I personally, it depresses me to think of doing something that I'm not all in with, you know? Mm-hmm. And in many ways, I personally, and I think that there's other people like me, you could argue that I put too much importance on the stuff that I make. I give it a higher level of import than it deserves, maybe,
mm-hmm.
To the point where it's actually... a problem, you know, that I look at, you know, I went and spoke at this thing last week, this salon, and Heather was asking me beforehand. She's like, I couldn't do that. It makes me nervous, whatever it is. And I said, you know, I don't get nervous anymore when I get up and I'm showing off my pictures because I feel like it's like I'm proud of my children and that's what I've made, you know,
right.
That I see them sort of as things that are. I made them and I let them go and they have their own life and I'm proud of them. So standing up and showing them off to people is not a reflection on me. It's a reflection on those pictures and I made those pictures and I'm proud of them. Does that make sense?
No, it makes perfect sense. And
some people would say I'm crazy though, that like, you know, you're talking about your art as if it's your children and children are far more important than art. And there's a crazy part of me that says, well, you know what? My art is, I get out of my art what some people get out of family or whatever, you know, whatever it is that makes them really happy. I've created something, I've made something. So that's how it fits into my larger part of my life, you know?
Well, but you're using, you know, to Ibarianex's point, you're using, or not using, using sounds, it's, photography is part of the happiness that comes from your life, or the happiness that comes in your life it can be directly connected to photography.
A big part of it and arguably too large a part of it.
Maybe. I mean, not like Avedon large, but
there's a certain amount of weight that you put on the different things in your life. And you could argue that I put too much weight on it, but you know what? The people who have really, really done something in a field are the people who have put that much weight on it and become obsessive about it and haven't softened the way they, you know, haven't sort of mellowed out and spread out their attention to the point where there's nothing that's getting too much attention. If anything, I'd rather give it too much attention because that means I'm giving it enough attention.
Yes, but I don't think you've become so
It may
myopic.
Sound like it on this show.
Yeah, I don't think you've become so myopic that photography as some sort of abstract is the end all be all. Okay.
No.
What I mean,
making stuff is to me.
Right. Okay. So last week we spent the first part of the show talking about the great flood of, what was it? The great flood of 2013. And on the surface, that conversation, you only caught the first 5 minutes of it, had
unnecessary
zero
details about Bill's life.
It had zero to do with photography. It had zero to do with the purview of the show. It had zero to do with anything. But that conversation led directly into photographing not only the happy times but the sad times. It led to a much larger discussion that was continued on the show and offline and in the Google Plus Hangout on Friday and
in the community, so, and people emailing us. Yeah.
Yeah. These things are informing other things.
Yeah.
Okay. Photography should inform the rest of your life, but the rest of your life should also inform your photography. Right. If all you're doing is listening to podcasts about process and gear and whatever endeavor you happen to be in, then you're missing the point.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
You're choosing the motorcycle, not going on the road trip.
Yes. go look at sculpture, go to the theater, go watch an opera, for God's sake. Go, you know, do something.
We went and saw go ahead.
No, and just I was just going to wrap up and say, you know, and let that inform your art, whatever that art may be.
Yeah.
I mean, look at Cisco. Your friend Cisco, incredible dancer, one of the top dancers in the world.
We went and saw them again on Saturday night, the Paul Taylor Company.
Yeah.
Cisco got us a couple comps, and we went and saw. And all three dances they did that night were amazing. And I'm looking at all these people on stage, you know, half dozen of whom are friends of mine, good friends of mine. And I'm just thinking, my God, these people are good. I wish that in my life I would become as good at what I do as they are at what they do. You know?
And
it's funny, I say that every year I see them, and I've seen them for the last 4 years or so, you know.
But I would bet money, and I don't know Cisco, but I would bet money that he doesn't spend all of his downtime reading dance magazines and surfing the internet looking for articles about dance.
He works out and he goes and dances and then he does photography on the side.
Yeah. So he's allowing other creative expression to inform his dance, and he's allowing his dance to inform his other creative expression.
And I think that's what we try to get across on this show. Right. Like and you know, the other thing is that, you know, you have opinions. I have opinions. We talk about these opinions on the show. And sometimes we get emails or comments saying like, I'm sick and tired of you people and your opinions and that kind of stuff. You know what? They're an opinion. You don't have to agree with me. I think that fashion photography, like street fashion photography, like when people are taking the pictures outside of some fashion show, I couldn't give a crap about that. Like I couldn't care. I think fashion clothes are a giant waste of time. Okay.
That being said, take 2 hours and go watch Bill Cunningham, New York.
Right.
Thank us for it. It's a fantastic film.
Which is an interesting thing. It's just not what I'm interested in. Does that mean that it's completely unimportant? No. It just thinks that I think that it's unimportant. Somebody wrote on the Google Plus group the other day about how portraits are easy to take. And as somebody who spent the last 5 years of my life trying to take portraits that I think are good enough, I respectfully disagree. You know, I think there's a lot of other photography that's much easier to take than portraits. Yes, you can take a picture of a person, but that doesn't mean that it's a good portrait.
Right.
And so, you know, if you disagree with me that you know, you think gear is important, or you think that's great. This is all about having a discussion. This is about trying to tease out the reasoning behind what we think and what we believe and why we believe it. And those things also inform your life.
Sure.
I don't know. We should probably talk about one of our sponsors.
Yeah. I think that's a fine idea.
Let's talk about Squarespace.
You know, let's talk about those crazy kids at Squarespace.
Okay. So you guys know who Squarespace is. If you want to build a website, this is the place you go. Everything you need to create an exceptional website. It's the hosting, it's the software behind it. You know, you got your beautiful templates, nice, clean, clear, perfect for portfolios. You got a drag and drop interface so you can drag your images in and move them around. You have responsive design, so these things look good all the way down to your phone. You don't have to do any special work. It sends up the shares up the image that you need for that particular device. You can send stuff to Twitter and to Facebook and pull things in from Tumblr. It's
hey, Bill?
It's yeah.
That all sounds great, but I really want to sell stuff.
Well, funny you say that, because there is now, you know what you are? You're a wise guy. The Squarespace has added a new business account, which has fully integrated e-commerce. And they've teamed up with Swipe. To accept credit cards on your website. So you can go and sell e-products. So you could sell like an ebook or something like that, and it'll actually serve up the actual ebook after somebody pays for it. Or get orders and ship out prints or something, say. For example, I've done this myself. I've set up Wadman Editions.
Shameless plug.
Yeah, so Wadman Editions, you can go buy prints of mine, and I've used this actually as like a little test thing for the Squarespace e-commerce stuff. And you could go there and, you know, you could put things on sale, you can set up different prices for different things,
Yeah, it's pretty sophisticated with the whole coupon codes and expiring dates.
Nice.
And it's
yeah.
very cool.
Yeah. Mine is very minimal and very whatever, and I'm just working on it, but it's live and it works. And it's just amazing that it's that easy. 'Cause you know, you and I have both used, some people use PayPal integration. There's mm-hmm. that Equid thing that kind of works, but this is all in one. It's easy. It's clean. The interface is fantastic. It's just totally the way to go.
Yeah. And if you get stuck, you've got 24/7 support.
Yeah. 24/7 support. And they like these people like answer the phone right away. It's amazing. And they even do in the new, the higher end versions, the unlimited and the business plan, will sync to Google Apps and MailChimp to like for contacts and that kind of stuff, which is actually pretty cool. So let's say you have your store, say you go to wadmaneditions.com and purchase
just,
a print.
Just as an example,
you can have it add everyone who buys stuff from you to a MailChimp list
right.
so that you can send out emailers to them if they want, you know, that kind of stuff. I mean, and to have that integrated is fantastic. Yeah, I really can't say enough about, they do a fantastic job.
Yep. They're very cool. I know Nikki loves their portfolio app too for the phone.
Oh yeah, yeah. That's totally cool. So yeah, for the phone and iPhone, it goes and it takes the images from your galleries on your website on Squarespace, pulls them down at full res, big files, so that they look good on your iPad or your iPhone, and it's completely offline. You know,
yeah,
so it catches
it's always
them
synced.
On the, yeah. So this is just sort of, look, if you want to, if you need a website or you're sick and tired of having to deal with the intricacies of your own website and the server and you're updating this, that, and the other thing, this is the way to go. And you could try it out for free for 2 weeks. How do they
no
do
credit
that
card.
For free? How do they go?
They go to squarespace.com/OTP.
Yep.
Choose, you enter in your email address and click continue and you're good to go. 2 weeks later, if you'd like to convert that to a paid account, you use the coupon code OTP3. It'll get mm-hmm. you 10% off, free domain name, and you're ready to go.
Yeah. And it's really fantastic. So give that a shot. Squarespace.com/OTP. Offer code OTP3. We have a good code for next month, though. I can't wait till next week so we can do the good code.
Can we tease? No, we can't.
No,
we can't.
No. we'll find out. But yeah, Squarespace, check them out. All right, so we got some other stuff on the list here. Have we talked enough about balance in life, or do you want to keep going with that?
I think balance is an ongoing issue, and I don't want to keep talking about it, you and I, but I would like to, those of you who are listening and are part of the Google Plus community or aren't but would like to be, get in on it. How does photography fit into your life? Where does photography fit into your life? And not just from a, well, it pays the bills or I'm trying to make it pay the bills, but dig a little deeper. What does it mean to you? How is it enhancing potentially the rest of your life?
Yeah.
We'd love to hear from you.
So we, you know, a couple things happened in the past week. So I did that talk on Wednesday, and
right.
one of the other presenters that night was a woman named Katrin Eisman.
Right.
Who I meet and I shake her hand and I'm talking to her for a minute and I'm like, I know you work at SVA. I know all that, but man, you sound familiar. Like I know who you are, but I could not place it. And I'm thinking. And then I look her up on my phone because I'm like, I know her somewhere. And it turns out she
it's
wrote...
It's just driving you crazy.
She wrote the Photoshop book that I learned a lot of my Photoshop from. She literally
book.
Wrote the book. Yeah.
Nice.
It's called, I think, Photoshop Retouching and Reconstruction or Repair or something. Restoration. That's right. Retouching and Restoration. And so it's really cool, and we've become friends, and we're going to do some stuff together. But it's amazing that there's people, you know, you meet these people at these places, and it's fantastic. And then I'm sitting there, and afterwards, a few people showed up to see the talk, whatever it is that I knew. And a guy comes over to me, Terry comes over to me. First of all, he calls me Mr. Wadman. You know, Mr. Wadman. Do I look like a Mr. Wadman?
No.
Right. I mean, you've been called Mr. Sidoris for the last 35 years. Ever since you were 20. But seriously, like it's Terry was very nice, and he made a point that
the guy he came up from Philly?
Yeah, he came up from Philly to see me, which was very nice of him.
How long? What is that? That's like 3 days, right? How far is that?
I don't know, hour and a half, I think, on the train.
That's nice.
Yeah, but he came up, and he made a point to say that we should do some get-togethers, some events and stuff. And
I think that's a fine idea.
Well, you, Jeffrey, are planning. We're trying to plan a trip for you guys to come out here in May or so, right? Late April, May, something.
Yeah. Should we take up a collection?
Well, we'll figure it out. But
should we do a Kickstarter?
Yeah,
that seems to be the new thing, right?
Yeah, we'll do Kickstarter for things we could afford on our own, but don't want to pay for. I'm looking at you.
What?
No, what's her name? I won't get into it. So anyway, so if you come, we should contact this Terry, and make this happen and get a little group together.
Yeah, I think it'd be great. It's something that I think would be a lot of fun. Maybe we can do a live show. Maybe we can, go out for, drinks or something, or just, something. I think it would be a lot of fun, especially given how fun the hangout was. I think doing something in person would be a blast.
And I also think that, I met that friend of mine who's got an 8x10 and some crazy old 112-year-old lenses that he wants to play with. So I think when you come to town, we may do like a little sort of workshop that we videotape.
That would be pretty cool.
We shoot. Yeah. Make a little video of us shooting with an 8x10, shooting some portraits with an 8x10. It could be kind of neat. So we're going to do that. And thank you for everyone who came out last week. I enjoyed doing it. And there will be more of those things in the future.
Didn't you say, I might have, my memories get all jumbled together, so excuse me. But didn't you say that Katrin, is that how you pronounce her name, Katrin?
I do believe so, yes.
Okay. She's now shooting almost exclusively with her iPhone?
Her talk was about how she shoots with her iPhone a lot, yeah.
I wonder, and a lot of people have different reasons for doing it, but the iPhone is – it's interesting to me still and continues to be from the standpoint of a lot of people are using it for very different work, that it's on some level become a serious tool. Right. And it's, I don't know. It's very strange to me. I love my iPhone. I don't use a lot of the apps that are out there. I know there are some really cool ones, but I tend to use 645 Pro and KitKam, and that's pretty much it.
Okay.
I do like Snapseed, but I wonder. I'd love to.
She had a whole list of the apps that she likes to use.
Yeah, I'd love to do kind of a roundtable, like a mobile photography roundtable, and talk about maybe that can be a theme for one of the hangouts moving forward.
Yeah,
and see what is it about these devices, whether it's an iPhone or a Galaxy or whatever it is that you're using, but what is it about them that has sort of become so huge? Or, you know what I mean?
Yep. I like using my iPhone, but I feel like, there are times when I pull up my iPhone, I feel limited by the focal length. Sometimes it's like too wide and whatever it is. I feel limited. I don't think that the images right out of it look all that great. So that, once you do a bunch of processing and vignetting and making it old school and whatever it is, okay, they could be cool looking. But I think that 10 years from now, I'm going to be like, man, I wish I had a higher res image of that file.
Mm-hmm.
Something that's a little sharper, because even at 8 megapixels, it's not per pixel sharpness. You're wasting a lot of that blurring across stuff. Stuff doesn't look that good out of the camera.
Have you used any of the aftermarket like lenses, like the Olli clip or anything?
I haven't, but I've heard mixed stuff about them. So I don't know, but I'm not going to carry around lenses. I mean, if I'm going to do that, I'm going to carry around a phone. Her point was that she'll go out with her D800 and her iPhone, and she will shoot with both, and then she will edit the pictures and upload them on her way home on the train or whatever.
Okay.
And on her phone, and then she'll get home and not do anything with the 800 shots because she's just, she's done with the pictures that she took.
Right.
But she also made the point that maybe 10 years from now, she'll go back and open up those files because she'll need them at higher res. So it's just,
it's interesting. I know there are people like Richard Hernandez and like Jack Hollingsworth who have shot commercial jobs on these things. And I think in certain conditions, in certain light, you know?
Yeah, but I still think that that's like, I don't know. That's like saying, you know, I drove the Indy 500 in a Ford Tempo just to prove that it could be done. It's like, yeah, but it's not the right tool for the job. You know, maybe it's the right tool for some reporter on the ground in some place where they just have one little thing in their pocket and they need to take video. But the quality is not going to be nearly as good as what they could get if they were doing it for real. And maybe it doesn't need to be for some website or whatever it is, but like if you're printing, you know, they don't look that good.
We are, just as an aside, Nick and I are going to try and go see Benjamin Lowy at the Annenberg space. He's giving a talk, I think, end of April.
You're going to go see Benjamin Button?
Benjamin Button, that's right. So I'm looking forward to it. They just opened their new war photography exhibit, which I have kind of mixed feelings about because I find some of that stuff very hard to look at. But it would be an interesting talk. I mean, he was the one who kind of got a lot of flack for the iPhone Instagram photos of soldiers.
Yeah. Well, you know, the there was another woman at the talk. So I was doing all this sort of high-end Photoshop work and showing off before and afters and whatnot. Katrin was showing off a bunch of stuff she did with her iPhone, much of which was very beautiful. But, you know, again, if you're sharing it on Instagram, you're going to end up with 4 billion of those a day. And who's to say, you know, there's so many images now you can't even keep up with what is good and bad anymore. You know, it's like just lost in the sea of pictures. So there's all that kind of stuff, you know? And then there was another woman there who, whose name was, Wendy. What did we figure out it was?
Wendy Patton. Patton. Is it not Platon, but Patton?
Right. And she does all of her work on film, and in a straight dark room, and then she takes a picture. She scans her prints if she needs them to be digital.
Her stuff is really interesting. It looks like it's really pushed, like the film's been pushed, and then it's printed on really high contrast paper. And
it's hyper contrasty.
Yeah.
And I personally, you know, it's a look, and she does it. I mean, she's pushing her film. She's using a contrasty developer. She's using contrasty paper. She's using an enlarger with a higher power light bulb to get more contrast. So these things end up almost looking like lithographs more than they are.
It's almost like a posterized type of a look.
Yeah. And she goes out and she shoots at night with her M7 or whatever she uses. And she doesn't like digital. She bought a Fuji X10.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, if you're used to shooting with an M7, going to an X10 is going to be a letdown and a confusing thing. You know, if you want to use a digital camera that's going to be exactly like your Leica, buy an M9, use the same lenses, and then you will get, you know, but whatever. So she shoots like that.
I hear good things about those X Pros.
Yeah, and those are good cameras too. But I'm just saying, if she's very used to a Leica and wants not many buttons at all, that's the way to go. You know. But she talked as if you couldn't do the stuff that she does in digital. And it's like, well, yeah, you really could.
I found that a little off-putting.
Well, it ends up, and this is not directly directed towards her, but there are people in that world who, I think it's more a matter of fear than it is reality. You know, they're scared of what, they're scared of the transition, and so therefore they deny it.
Really? Do you think it's a fear type thing?
Yeah, they don't want to have to learn digital stuff, and it's oh so confusing. And when it's really not, you know, there's plenty of really dumb people who can figure out how to organize their pictures on a computer. And using something like Lightroom to be able to go, oh, exposure up, contrast up, you know, whatever it is. Like, this is not – you don't need to know how to use Photoshop in order to – there's a lot more complexity in darkroom work than there is working on photos in Lightroom, you know. But I mean, to each his own. If she wants to keep doing that, that's fine. I just don't think that she'll be able to in 5 or 10 years, you know, or it's going to get even more and more expensive. Unless she's independently wealthy, then it's going to get tricky.
Yeah. Somebody in the group, gosh, who was it now? I don't remember who it is. Somebody in the G+ group is still shooting film and saying that at least for black and white, that the options are not only as good, but even better. He was
than
saying
they
that,
used to be.
Than they used to be, yeah. He said that half a dozen shops near or around his house have the full line of Ilford papers and chemicals.
I don't know where the heck he lives. I can't. B&H even barely has paper anymore.
It's Andrew. Andrew Kaiser? Is that who it is?
Okay.
Yes, Andrew.
Is he in America or is he in Germany?
I don't know where Andrew, I don't know where he is. Where are you, Andrew? Lives in Portland, Oregon.
Oh, really? Okay. I just know that, I mean, I hope that it stays around. I'm just not very hopeful that it will, you know,
mm-hmm.
And I don't necessarily, you know, there was once an argument, say 10, 15 years ago, where you could say, yes, film literally looks better. Like the quality is better. I don't know that that's true anymore. You know, they look different, but I don't think one looks better than the other necessarily.
Okay.
They might look better for a specific shot or a specific situation. But, you know, Cisco put up a picture last week of him, a self-portrait in a mirror. And
the one with the makeup lights around it?
Yeah. And I said, you know what? Why don't you try making even more contrasty and adding some grain so it ends up looking much like this woman's pictures.
Yeah, it looks like it was shot on HP5 or something.
Yeah, and he did, and it looked great. And it's like, okay, mm-hmm. We mimicked film, and that looked cool. You know, so, okay, that happens sometimes, you know, but I don't think an argument could be made that like, oh, it's not a photograph unless it's, you know, because there's
so the argument is less about a qualitative difference than an aesthetic difference.
Yes. And which is fine. But I don't think that the industry can support that because it's still a commercial industry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe the photographer's apothecary or whatever, you know, that company that makes. There's some company that makes chems for darkroom chemicals that is like some small sort of...
Like a bespoke type of a chemistry maker or
right.
something?
Like, okay, yeah, mm-hmm. those people might be around. But I don't think at the point at which it becomes untenable commercially for Ilford or whoever, they're not mm-hmm. going to keep making it. Didn't Kodak stop making black and white paper, didn't they?
I don't know if they're still making black and white
I think they did last
paper.
Year. So, I mean, there's situations like that where like, yeah, okay, the big people are not going to be able to do it. And maybe the little people, it'll be so niche that they'll be able to survive on like some small thing, much like, you know, the people who are still building, record player cartridges, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's a handful of small companies that are doing that, that are making a living because there's no big companies making them. So these little people can survive. Great. You know? But it's never going to be like everyone's going to have a record player in their house again. It's just not going to happen.
I wonder, I mean, part of it is film has a look, and I don't want to go down a film versus digital rabbit hole, but film has a look sort of right out of the camera that you don't have to try and create. And I wonder if that...
Well, it has a look once it goes through chemistry and goes on to paper.
Right. But I mean, there's... I don't know. Maybe there's less that has to be done to it in some way. I don't know.
You also have less control.
Yeah.
Image to image, you have to process a whole roll all the same.
Yeah.
You know? I understand what you're saying. I mean, it's funny, though. Yesterday, I had a roll of film in my Leica that I had no idea what the heck it was because I haven't processed it. And I haven't used it in like a year and a half, and I had no idea what was on this roll. It turns out that it's actually almost 2 years old, this roll of film, because it's there from when the Heather and I and the Brits went to DC before my sister moved there. So it was before October of 2011. And there was two pictures on it from the trip. Cause I ended up taking a lot more pictures with my iPhone. There you go. I'm just saying that like some people, you know, you end up doing that. Had I had an M9, I probably would have taken more pictures with the M9, but the film is a pain in the neck because you have a certain speed film in it and you go inside, you go outside, you're trying to light meters, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Right.
But the interesting thing about it was that the rest of the roll was me apparently letting other people use the Leica just to take pictures around my apartment.
Ah, okay.
So it was lots of pictures of my walls, you know, because people come over and they're like, oh, I want to see one of those. And they play with it. And I'm like, take a few shots, figuring that there was no film in it. And turned out there was film in it. And so anyway, long and short of it,
or they just want to hear the shutter. That
right, exactly. that I ended up bringing this film in. The cops are coming for me.
That's right.
That I brought this film in and dropped it off, and got it back. And I have this Chinese couple owns a little lab near me, a few blocks away, and they run my stuff through the machine for $5. They'll just run the C41 through the machine and just hand me the negative, and that I take it home and I scan it if I want anything. And I took it down there, $5 there, and say $3 or $4 for the roll of film. And there were two pictures on it that were actually of anything that I actually took a picture of. So there's the downside of film too, which is that this film has been sitting around for a year and a half, and I finally go get it processed, and I paid $5 a picture to get these, you know, mediocre pictures that are not really good in the first place. So there's two sides of it. And you know what? The pictures aren't that great. You know, yeah, I could scan them really well and get the color perfect and pull down and open up the shadows and blah, blah, blah. But you know what?
Be perfect, Bill. That's the point.
Well, not perfect. I just mean that they don't look that great as is. You know, it's not like they have some sort of film magic that makes them perfect right out of the camera. You know, I'm not trying to make them perfect. I'm just saying that the white balance and the exposure are wrong. You know,
you've gone per pixel sharpness crazy, Bill. Yeah. Back it off.
Ugh. Anyway. Long and short is that film ain't always the panacea that people make it out to be. That's all I'm saying, Jeffrey.
All right.
You want to fight me on that?
No, go ahead. What is this thing Adrian put up?
Oh, Adrian Fielding put up this. She sent me this link.
Friend of the show, Adrian Fielding.
Yeah. Writes. It's called Dear Mr. Eggleston by a guy named Greg Bottoms.
And I'm assuming that this is dandy photographer William Eggleston.
Yeah. So he's writing like an essay to William Eggleston about a particular picture of a parking lot at Sears or whatever it was, and how it reminded him of this whole situation when he was younger, like just took him back, and that time collapsed. Excuse me. When he was looking at this, and he just reminded him of his father and all this kind of stuff. And
What a great way to describe that.
The time collapses. Yeah.
Yeah. He says, when I hold your photograph, I'm looking at our car in the Sears parking lot in 1976 and time has collapsed. What a great sentence.
Yeah. You know, there's a quote here though, from Eggleston, from the London Observer online archive, right? It says, quote, "A picture is what it is. And I've never noticed that it helps to talk about them or to answer specific questions about them, much less volunteer information in words. It wouldn't make any sense to explain them, kind of diminishes them. People always want to know when something was taken, where it was taken, and God knows why it was taken. It really gets ridiculous. I mean, they're right there, whatever they are."
See,
I love how cranky Eggleston is.
He makes you sound positively charming.
That's the most stupid question I've ever heard. Bill Eggleston.
But it is, I don't know. I mean, I don't agree with him at all.
You don't agree with what Eggleston said there?
No, well, okay, not at all.
Here's the thing. I think this really depends on the kinds of pictures you take. The kinds of pictures that Bill Eggleston takes, which are, you know, here's this parking lot, here's this tricycle on the ground, here's this guy sitting, old guy sitting on his bed holding a gun or whatever it is, right?
Right.
Those are in many ways sort of timeless, iconic, the kind of pictures where it really doesn't matter when and where it was taken, because the whole point of it is that it's supposed to be this generic abstraction, this sort of platonic ideal of whatever it is that you're taking the picture of.
I get all that. I get that it's supposed to be this everyman thing, right? Where it could just be applicable to whatever.
Yeah, but it's whatever parking lot in 1968. It doesn't matter what parking lot it was. It was a parking lot in 1968, and that's what parking lots felt like then or whatever.
Yeah, but to me, listening to that quote, if it's not worth the story behind it, if it's not worth talking about it, if it's not worth discussing it, if it's not worth any of that, then why did you take it?
I think that the idea is that whatever it was to him in that moment is not what he's trying to get across in the photograph. That he saw something, he took the picture, how he felt when he took that picture doesn't matter to him in his work.
you know.
But that that's strange to me.
He's hoping that the photograph that he's showing you will have some response in your mind when you see it that is individualistic to you. It's up to you how you respond to it. And that he's not making things that are historic in the sense that, like, oh, this was taken the moment JFK was shot or something like that, mm-hmm. where it matter, where the context actually matters. His stuff is contextless, I think, is his argument. Plus, he's drunk all the time.
That his individual
he's
context
too busy.
Is irrelevant.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
You know, that the photographs he takes are not about context. They're just about what is on the paper, you know. It's just the prettiness of what he got in his frame. That's it.
But see, his photos weren't pretty, by his own admission, that he wanted to...
Well, I use pretty in a pejorative sense. I mean, okay. In more of like, just they are visually what they are. And if they mm-hmm. inscribe something in you, you know, that's what's supposed to happen. What it did for him when he took the picture is meaningless. Mm-hmm. In his estimation. You know what? He's the artist. He can make that thing. I mean, you and I have talked about context and process and whatever it is. I mean, Bill Eggleston definitely has a process that he follows, and the kinds of pictures he takes are very him, you know?
Sure.
And I like a very many of them, and I didn't before I saw a big show of his at, where was it, the Whitney a few years ago? There was a great show, and I sort of fell in love with his work in a way that I didn't understand before that.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't from reading stuff about him. It was just about seeing the pictures, better prints in a larger place with a whole bunch of them in one place.
Is the guide still in print?
I'm sure you can get copies of it. I don't know if it's the actual.
I wouldn't mind having that book. That you, and you early color. I'd like to have.
I'll tell you though, the book that I have of his is better than the guide because it's got almost everything. Yeah, you can get a hardcover for $26.
Okay.
The book that I have of his is in many ways, I think, better. It's the one for the show that I saw, and you can get it for $69 used. I'll put this in the show notes too.
Okay.
But this is, this is William Eggleston Democratic Camera. It's a big, giant, chunky book. It's like how many pages is the thing? 320 pages. It's a big book. And yeah. It's got really nice prints, and it's got all the good stuff from the guide plus a whole bunch of other stuff. So you should definitely go for that if you're going to go for a book. But I think that I take his point. But see, the fact is that this guy, this writer, wrote this big, long essay
mm-hmm.
about what he saw in this picture and what it reminded him. And I think the point is that he's fine with you coming up with all this stuff. That's great. You know, that's what he was trying to do, but
right.
It doesn't matter what he thought, you know, it's, if it's doing something for you, more power to him.
Right.
You know, and this guy, it really did affect him in a really large way. I think it's a pretty good essay.
Interesting. Yeah. Put it in the show notes.
We will put it in the show notes. Yeah. We will put it in the show notes. Suck it. All right. What else is somebody else put an article asked a question. Chris Connors asked a question on Google Plus community about matching his monitor to his prints. He has a
right.
decent Canon printer. He's got a 27-inch iMac, and apparently he's found that they're way off from each other. And I just wanted to comment and say that if you are not in some way profiling and controlling your monitor, then you really have no idea what your images look like. If you were to send them to somebody to get printed, you really need to, most monitors are way, way, way too bright.
Mm-hmm.
That you have to pull them down. And if you go buy one of these $160 Color Monkey or X-Rite things or whatever it is, you can profile and create an ICC profile. And it basically, you know, it puts up patches of color on the screen, and you put this puck that measures the patches of color, and it creates an ICC profile that compensates for the incorrectness of your screen and kind of brings it into alignment and generally brings the brightness down to like 120
right.
or 140 nits. And I just wanted to say that in many ways, your printer printing a pristine file is going to do a really good job even without exact profiles for your paper, you know?
One of them, I don't remember who it is. Maybe you know, one of the scanners will also, you print out test patterns and it will, you run those yeah, run the scanner over those, and it will match
custom profiles for the printer too.
Right.
But I've done that actually. I've rented one of those to do it for some of these papers for my new printer when I was trying to figure out exactly what was so off about it. And I ended up getting ones that weren't as good as the ones that, say, Red River made for the papers that I was using anyway.
Okay.
But that monitors are generally way more off than your printer's going to be. A modern good photo printer is going to
do
a pretty good job.
I don't remember where I read it, but I remember reading something that the iMac monitors are calibrated for NTSC.
Could be. I will tell you, they're not calibrated to look really good on photos. Mm-hmm. Or rather, they look good, but they're not accurate, you know. Plus, they have a brightness setting, and there's auto brightness. You got to pull all that. You got to turn auto brightness off, pull the brightness down, where your white may actually look a little bright gray to you and not completely super bright because you're used to the super bright.
Mm-hmm.
But if your prints come out really, really dark and you really don't know why, it's because your monitor is too bright.
Yeah, I have not done a hardware calibration. I've just done the software calibration, but I know the brightness on my monitor is like 15. I mean, it's way down.
Yeah. And you really should. So, I mean, you know, I'm not telling you what to get. I mean, I'll put a couple of links in the show notes of the kind of things that I would use. I'm a big fan of X-Rite stuff. My current monitor, my NEC, has built-in lookup tables and its own SpectraView software. So mine's a special instance in this case. But just something to think about. Like if you're just looking at your stuff and you don't have any sort of you haven't measured your monitor and leveled it out, you really are looking at, it's like, you know, trying to make decisions with like tinted glasses on.
Mm-hmm. You know,
that's essentially what it is.
Now you just built another machine. Was it Cisco's machine that you just calibrated?
I did Cisco's machine. It looks pretty good.
Okay. What did you use?
I used MyPuck with the iProfile software from X-Rite, but MyPuck is like a specialized i1 display 2 that NEC gives you that has a certain filter in it, but his looks pretty good. I mean, it's not amazing, but it's pretty good for a $600 27 inch monitor. And then I built Claude's machine too. Oh man, we put that big giant honking video card in there and we were playing back Blackmagic cinema camera stuff in real time. Just a folder full of DNGs and it was just rendering them in real time.
That's nice.
It was cool.
Anyway,
so just putting that out there, you guys should check into that. Let's see how much time we have left. You know what? We're getting up there. Why don't we talk about our second sponsor?
Second sponsor?
Yeah. We have two sponsors this week.
Two sponsors.
Two sponsors. Yeah. So Shutterstock is back with us as our second sponsor.
Yes. It's kind of funny. We talked about stock images at the top.
Yeah.
And people
paying for images instead of stealing them.
Yeah. If you don't want to get sued, here's where you go.
Yeah. It's actually a really good point. Shutterstock has over 20 million stock photos, vectors, illustrations, and video clips. They've got tons and tons and tons of stuff. So you can go there. You can check it out. Go to shutterstock.com. You can find the perfect image for your website, ad, publication, or other creative project. I've suggested before, you know, using this if you need a single element for some composite you're doing. Oh, it's perfect, except I need a brick wall, you know, or whatever it is.
Yeah. Or how many Marshall stacks did you find last week or a couple weeks ago?
A bunch. Yeah.
Yeah.
I could have saved myself the trouble of going all the way into town to shoot my Marshall stack. So, you know, go check them out. You can go get an image for $19 or something.
Pay as you go starts at 19. Yeah. They've also got subscriptions. So if you're running a website or your business is somehow on the web or using a variety of images.
Say you own fadedandblurred.com.
Say you do, and you don't, and say you don't have Nikki to go out and shoot things for you. you can sign up for these subscription services or a subscription plan. $199 a month they start at.
Yeah.
And that'll get you 25 images a day. I mean, do the math. You're going to save a lot of money.
Yeah. Absolutely. Totally. Super, super handy. And you know what? It's, you know, if you just need an image for a blog or a mock-up, you know, or a composite, go get one image. But if you were the kind of person who uses a ton of images, go subscribe, you know, you can download any of the images in any size. Not only do they have the photos, but remember they also have vectors and illustrations and stuff. So if you're into like web design and that kind of stuff, and you need arrow illustrations and that kind of stuff, you're always looking for it. This is a great place to go. They have an,
you can share images.
Yeah.
You can do a light box. So if you're doing a project for a client, you can create a light box and get approval on the images before you go ahead and purchase them. I mean, it's a pretty cool
iPad.
Resource. Yeah, on your iPad as well.
And you get an account rep that's dedicated to you, 24-hour support during the week. You should go over to Shutterstock.com, sign up for a free browse account. We'll let you look around. You don't need a credit card or anything, just like Squarespace.
I like these companies that are adding 24-hour support now. I mean, you and I both are night people and work well into the night. And it's nice if you've got a problem, if you've got a question, it's nice to be able to just know that you're going to get somebody on the other end that can help you out.
Yeah. So when you find the images you want to purchase, use the offer code PICTURES3 and you'll get 30% off of any one of those packages. PICTURES3.
That's a good deal.
It is a good deal. I mean, if you need a lot of images, that's a crazy good deal. Shutterstock, we thank them for their support.
Yep.
All right. Who's our photographer of the week?
Really? Are we at the photographer of the week?
I think we are. Is there something else? You got something else on the list?
No, I'm just messing with you.
Okay.
Gordon Parks is our photographer
classic.
Of the week. Yeah. Gordon Parks. Go ahead. Let me hear what you got about Gordon Parks.
Well, I would like to say one of the first African-American photographers who really made a name for himself was around in the 30s, big in the civil rights movement and that kind of stuff. Took that really famous picture now of it's called American Gothic, of this maid holding a broom and a mop in front of an American flag.
Mm-hmm.
Which he took, I think, like in just some office building that he was working, doing a story for some magazine. It was like one of his first things that he worked on. And he found some maid and he's like, here, do you mind if I take your picture? And had her go get the mop and the broom and just took the shot. And it's, super famous, his picture of Muhammad Ali is great.
Very iconic. I mean, even after the fact, yes, he's iconic now in retrospect, but the composition that his photographs have they're just fantastic.
Yeah.
They really are.
Yeah. Oh, man, he has taken some lovely pictures. Look at this shot for Vogue. I'm going to put it here. Look at that beautiful woman. So this guy has been around, has done fashion, has done stuff for the government back in the 30s. I mean, this guy has taken pictures in the South. Obviously, a lot of racially imbued stuff. A lot, pictures mm-hmm. of Malcolm X and jazz musicians and that kind of stuff. But he's also done, straight stuff for Life and Vogue, fashion work, Monster. He died pretty recently, a couple months ago.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Are we not even going to talk about Shaft?
Well, know what? I'm completely wrong. He died in 2006. I'm sorry. Talk about Shaft. Sure.
Talk about Shaft.
Okay.
He directed Shaft. Come on.
It's true. And Shaft is, Blaxploitation City. Good stuff.
And also Shaft's big score.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Man, that guy got around.
He got around.
Plus he had a fantastic mustache.
Well, yeah.
Especially when he got older and it became all white and he's all like, oh, I like him. There's a good, documentary called Photography in America or something like that I've watched, where they do some interviews with him. I'll have to find, I have it somewhere. So I'll have to find out where I got it.
Is it available streaming somewhere?
I'm sure it is. I think it might have been. It's a PBS, American Photography. Mm-hmm. PBS, American Photography.
There's you can go to we'll put the links in the show notes, but you can go to GordonParksFoundation.org, which is, a foundation kind of protecting his images. And there's some really interesting work that they've got. You can find a bio there. You can find an archive of his images, obviously.
Yeah.
But really beautiful stuff. Did fashion work, did portraits, his, there's a, oh gosh, much the same way that Irving Penn with his portraits of like chimney sweeps and workers and things like that. Parks did a series on workers as well that were just fantastic. They're like environmental portraits.
Yeah. Classic cute guy who has a huge set of images. I mean, you know, a lifetime's worth of images that you could just get lost in if you want to take the time. Good choice, though.
Yeah, Gordon Parks. Good stuff.
What else we got for today? Hey, can I just say, first of all, one more time, show notes. 5x5.tv/OTP will get you to the OTP homepage. But if you want to go straight to this episode, /OTP/48 will get you straight to the show notes. And, you know, if you listen to the show, go over to iTunes, rate us, write a review. That would be fantastic.
Yeah, we got a couple new reviews, right?
Yeah, they're very nice reviews. Nice. The Google Plus community, what's the Bitly link?
It is just bit.ly, so bit.ly/OTP group. Okay. That will get you there.
So go add yourself to the Google group and join the conversation. If you want to get a hold of us, podcast@ontakingpictures.com or
yes.
On Twitter, I am at Bill Wadman. You are at Jeffrey Sidoris, ERYDD1R. And anything else we missing?
No.
You know, pick a fellow, somebody from the group to help us administrate the group a little bit. So if anybody wants to nominate somebody or is interested in helping us out, help, because it's getting to the point where it's sort of like we need a little help.
Go look right now. Is it Goncalo Martins just posted a really cool motorcycle shot?
See, we got some good.
It looks like it should be in like a Yamaha brochure or something. Yeah. It was a fantastic shot.
Great work. And you know, put your stuff up there and let people discuss them. It's good stuff.
Yeah, it's good. We've been having a real good time on that. Possible hangout? We still want to do a hangout on Friday?
Yeah, maybe we'll do a hangout. On Friday, I'll be up in Connecticut. We may have to do it next week because I got to go to Connecticut, see my mother. But maybe I can do it from up there. Let me see how the internet connection is.
Bill's mom won't let him come out and play on Friday.
Well, I don't know if she has an internet connection that's fast enough to quite do that, but I'll see what I can do.
All right.
Anything else?
No. Have a great week. Thanks for listening. Really enjoy this. Hope you guys enjoy it too.
Go take some pictures.
Yeah, go take pictures. All right.